Yeah, and you have the full titties.
The titties, yes. I almost didn't wear them. I put them on and I looked at my roommate and I said, tits or no tits? And he said, tits.
Yeah, I'm glad you went tits.
Go big or go home.
Cameron, you're now I feel like I know you. I mean, I knew you before, but yeah. Now it's you. Good to see you.
It's good to see you too.
Welcome to Sweet Release. Hi, sweets. Welcome back. Today, I have Miss Eleven here, Eleven Divine.
Yes.
And we're also going to meet you as Cameron a little later today.
My better half.
But first, here you are as Eleven. And for those that aren't watching and listening, she is dressed to the nines. You look amazing.
Thank you.
Could you explain how long it takes and what goes into this whole drag persona of yours?
Absolutely. Well, it should take me an hour and a half. But I started getting ready at 6:30 a.m. today. And I believe you picked me up at 10:40 a.m. So it takes several hours to feel the full fantasy for me. I like to take my time. You know, for me, drag is a way to feel beautiful. And if I don't feel like I've taken the time to achieve that, then I just, my performance feels off. My energy feels off. Drag in itself is a very ego-driven hobby. I'd like to think that it's more altruistic than that, but really, that is a key component of it. And I think people want drag queens to be that too. So makeup for several hours after gluing down my eyebrows, and then it's about 40 minutes of getting into, you know, 5 inches of couch cushion and duct tape and 6 pairs of tights and all of it. It's a lot.
Yeah. And you have the full titties.
The titties. Yes. I almost didn't wear them. I put them on and I looked at my roommate and I said, tits or no tits? And he said, tits.
Yeah. I'm glad you went tits.
Go big or go home.
Is it heavy?
It is.
Everything's heavy. The booty and the
booty's not heavy. No, the booty's really light. I almost don't even. Actually, when I do drag and perform in drag, I'm grateful that I have the cushion around my hips, because if I'm doing any sort of stunt work, it allows me to, you know, not land on bone or anything. Mm-hmm. The breastplate is silicone and it's like 7 to 8 pounds hanging off my neck, and it's hot and it's slimy afterwards. It's really for something that looks so beautiful, like, on the surface, drag is a really disgusting pastime. It's so gross.
So how did you come up with this kind of image of your drag and the name and all of that?
Yeah, I definitely have to like say that I fashion a lot of my aesthetic and my drag around 3 really big things. The first being my mother. I grew up watching her, you know, just sort of emanate beauty and poise and love and divinity. You know, she is a larger than life character. She's a really bright soul. You know, I always like to describe her as if Gandhi and Mother Teresa had a baby that was a unicorn, a magical unicorn that then shot out this other mystical creature out of its womb. That mystical creature would be my mother. Like, she's just pure love. And then I grew up in the 90s. So 90s supermodels, big tits, big hair, big makeup, you know, really just absolutely adore like that glamazon persona, right? And then finally, I pull, especially from like my performances or things I'll do, you know, in my costume work, I like to pull from stuff that's like an homage to certain films or like iconic women throughout history or in pop culture. So I kind of just try to marry those things together. And Eleven came, originally my name was Kiki Von Cox. It was 2020 and I thought long and hard about a drag name, and I was like, Kiki Von Cox is it. It translates to party of dicks. It's funny. It's campy. It's me. But I wanted something that felt less pigeonholed to a type of drag. And, you know, as I evolve this character, and I still am evolving it, it's an evolutionary process. I think as humans, we go through that, right? So drag's the same way. My drag evolves. And I wanted something that I could take with me, a name that I could take with me through that evolution. And the number 11 popped into my head for a couple of reasons. You know, the 11th dimension is the dimension of all creativity and wisdom. It's where the Akashic records are kept. I believe I'm a keeper of those. And it just, it's something like this intuitive, mystical knowledge that I believe my creativity flows from. And then in terms of the double ones standing next to each other, that also sort of represents the duality of gender in my, for me personally in my life. And then finally, I mean, in a world full of tens, it's good to be the only 11.
Love that.
And then divine, I originally was just 11 when I picked that name. And then I got a drag mother in Denver, whose last name was Deluxe, and I became a Deluxe. It was 11 Deluxe. It sounds like a special off a diner menu.
It does.
Yeah, right? I'll have the number, the 11 Deluxe. But that working relationship fell apart and I was let go from the Deluxe family.
Oh, bummer.
Yeah. You know, honestly, it really hurt. But I went home, wiped my tears, and realized I was divine. So just kind of worked, right?
Your independence then
came out. Exactly.
And then you moved to LA. That was in Denver, right?
Yeah. You know, so COVID hit. I don't know if anyone heard about COVID, but it was this thing in 2020, you know, inconvenient. But COVID hit and like everyone across the globe, everything went to lockdown and I didn't know what to do with myself. And I'd always had this fascination for drag. I grew up in the theater. I've always loved beautiful women. It has always called me. And drag, or the show Drag Race didn't help either. You know, it's in your face. It's so fabulous. And I was unemployed, getting the big sums of money. I was living in a sober living, which was already paid for. And I just had all this time and money coming in. And so I made the sensible choice to buy wigs and high heels, and start practicing my drag. And that eventually just continued to snowball until, you know, I moved to Denver, decided I was going to do it professionally, did it professionally for 3 years. And just recently, this past January, came back to LA to try and see what I can do with myself here.
Yeah, beautiful. And we actually, I meant to mention this in the beginning, but we met and we dated. And so this is like so cool because I've never seen you as 11 before. And, but when we met, you know, you're so many things. You're an artist, you're a writer. You were writing a drag movie when we met. So I knew like your love for drag and your passion for drag, but I never saw you as 11. But maybe she didn't exist yet. Did she?
No, I hadn't done drag at that point, but I remember, and maybe I made up this memory in my head, so forgive me if I did. But I remember sitting at like a restaurant down in Venice. We were eating, it was like nachos. I don't know. Tacos were involved. I don't know. Anyways, we were talking about drag or something. And you had said you had this like vision of me on the red carpet in full drag and you in a suit or something. And, you know, like life goes on, things happen as they do. But it was such an interesting moment hearing you speak of it and then going through this journey and looking back on those words and thinking, you know, cause I mean, you're a pretty, intuitive being, I think. I mean,
Thank you.
The impression I've gotten from you. And that stuck with me because I believe in your intuitive skills and I believe in mine as well. And knowing that, you know, even if it's not you and me on that red carpet in that moment, really it's the energy of it, right? It's, you know, this is some part of me that was coming forward to you in that moment and that was wanting to come out of me. And, you know, I stepped into it. And I've explored it. And, you know, I have plans for my drag that do involve red carpet. So a little bit of a fortune teller.
I love that. Yeah. Thanks for sharing.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's the artistic side of it that you love so much? Like, because it really is kind of an art for you.
It is 100%. You know, drag is different for everyone. I've been blessed to watch young queer kids come into the drag scene and try it out and love it, and also discover parts about their gender identity through it and their self-expression through it. I've had girlfriends that do drag, where, you know, they perform and they stay in the guiche and they go out on the club floor and they take a man home in it. You mm-hmm. know, it's different for everyone. For me, it is a creative outlet. And I've always been a storyteller, you know, in addition to drag, like you said, I'm a screenwriter. I'm working on a novel right now. It's a fantasy fiction novel. I'm a painter. I'm a seamstress. Like, I'm an actor. For me, drag is just another extension of storytelling. I get to live, whether it's like my 90s diva fantasy, I'm, you know, Celine Dion, or, you know, I'm that pop princess, you know, because I can't sing to save my life, but I get to pretend I do. Or I get to pay homage to like my favorite comic book characters and, like, you know, create this whole moment on stage for people. You know, it's really just such a fun way to get to tell a story. And the other thing I really do love about drag that I would say is the most rewarding of it, because there's a lot of parts of drag that aren't rewarding. But the most rewarding part is touching someone's heart or that spot inside them where they needed to heal in that moment. And for whatever reason, them seeing you do whatever number you just did in whatever club you were just at compelled them to heal in some capacity and then come up to you after and, you know, tip you a scrunched up $5 bill and just say, I love you so much. You can't believe what you just did for me. You know, it's those moments that I really think I do it for mostly.
Yeah, that's what I do this for too, is the people that you help and the people that you heal. I mean, Right. That's what life is. That part of life is so rewarding.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately it's all love, right? Mm-hmm. You know, I really, in my 37 years, have come to this place of understanding for at least why I'm here on this planet. I think it's universal, but I'll speak for myself. Is that we're here to love and be loved. Mm-hmm. And learn how to receive and give love and unconditionally too, right? Mm-hmm. And I see that's why you do this. It's why I write my books, why I do almost everything I do.
Yeah. There's another creative part of it that you love, that you like create your own clothing too.
I do. Yes. I did not make this. I can't take credit for this one. This was a thrift shop find, which is, you know, drag is expensive. And I've learned, you know, that there's nothing wrong when you need a quick look to go find something on a bargain. Mm-hmm. That being said, one of my favorite parts of drag is the costume work, right? Like the big brand gowns or the superhero outfit or whatever it may be. So I taught myself to sew, you know, it was like 2021. And I bought a sewing machine and I have not looked back since. I'm actually in fashion school right now to kind of hone some of the more technical aspects of design that I understand, but I don't fully know innately, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But it's fun to
create
that. Oh, yeah. Just create and have. I started sewing in 2020 as well. I was like picking up hobbies and. So lately I've been doing some denim, like refurbishing and just kind of like, patchwork and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So it's fun to tap into that creative side.
It is. And, you know, really, I think anything that we do as people, whether it's start a podcast or take up sewing or yoga or whatever it is, it's right. It's like, it's a multifaceted, like, search for connection. It's a way to like give something of yourself. And growth through the process. And, you know, for me, there's something about like taking fabric, like just that's, you know, someone else's beautiful creation and putting myself into it and struggling with it, failing at it, rethinking it, trying something different with it, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, I think it almost mirrors life for me.
Yeah. What about like being on stage? Like, how does that feel? Or even like putting on this whole wig and makeup and everything and changing into a woman, like, how does that feel? Like, what is the energy like?
You know, I think it's somewhere around the time I paint my lip on, or it's like the eyelashes. There's some moment, and it's different for every drag performer. Okay. Like, there's some moment in the process where it's just makeup and you're just you and you look a damn fool. And then some step happens and you look in the mirror and you're like, oh, I'm a woman. Like, I'm that bitch. Like, I'm that girl. You know, RuPaul says it really well. Like, when you don't know who you are in drag until you put drag on, right? Like, 11 comes out once the drag comes on. And as Cameron, who is a very sensitive, hypercritical being, of like self-critical being, like, you know, especially around my creativity, I'm a perfectionist. I want things to be perfect, right? But as Cameron, when 11's present, I have to step out of 11's way. You know, I have to get on stage and not make it about every little minute detail. I have to feel the music. I have to connect with the audience. I have to understand that the choreography that I spent like 3 days working on in my room may or may not happen. And that's okay. It's really about being in the moment, being in the energy of it. Nerves. I remember my first performance ever. I was a wreck. I was super nervous. But I don't remember when it stopped happening, or like when I stopped having those like jitters or that anxiety around performing. I also think I grew up doing theater. So being in front of people, talking in front of people, performing in front of people isn't new to me. I would say that the hardest part of it is allowing myself to step out of my, out of 11's way.
Mm-hmm. You know, letting her take over.
Right. Letting her be in her moment, do what she's supposed to do, and not compare myself to other queens. You know, that's comparing to, that'll take you out of the performance right away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. In general, we should never compare ourselves.
100%. 100%.
A good lesson. Yeah. Do you have any tips for people if they're interested in exploring drag or insights?
Don't. No. Look, if you've got the bug and it's something you want to do, you know, the first step is maybe if you know a queen or you know someone who does makeup, or you have some way to try it out without having to put all your money or time into it at first, I would recommend that. Drag is expensive and it's a commitment. And, you know, you might go spend hundreds of dollars on makeup and wigs and go and do it for a week and be like, I hate this. If you don't have that option, and you really still want to do it, I recommend finding some drugstore makeup. You know, you don't have to break the bank. There's good stuff at CVS. And watch makeup tutorials. You know, RuPaul has put a platform out for the girls that have been on her show that has allowed them to reach like mass audiences. I learned to paint my face by watching Roxy Andrews tutorials on Facebook on Monday nights. I really highly recommend that. And just paint. Keep painting your face. You know, you fuck it up, you fuck it up.
Yeah, do you feel like because you like to paint and you're an artist, that kind of helps with painting your face?
I think so. I think, you know, I think good bone structure helps. I know that sounds awful, but I mean, good bone structure helps. And then, yes, having some understanding of color theory, some understanding of, like, you know, like I said, I did theater, so I'd done theater makeup, you know, I had a history of it. But practice makes perfect. And also, just because you mess up your left eyebrow doesn't mean you wipe off your whole face. Like, just keep going, finish the mug, then wipe it off and then start over. In terms of getting started in the drag scene, go to your local bars. Tip those girls, buy them drinks if you are of legal age and can do so. Interact with them, get to know them. You know, drag is as much a performance sport as it is a people sport. You know, you got to schmooze, you got to kiki, you got to, you know, show up and make sure they feel important and seen. And in turn, they'll most likely be more keen to give you a chance.
Mm-hmm. I love that. What is like an empowering moment that you've had, if you're willing to share, being in drag on stage, maybe or not?
Yeah. You know, I've had, you know, it's, I don't know how inspiring of it a moment it is going to be, but it was a really powerful moment for me. I was living in Denver, and it was Pride, not this most recent, it was a Pride or two ago, mm-hmm. we'll say that, whatever. And I was producing a show at a venue, and it was Pride show, and I had been, I'm in recovery. And my recovery journey from addiction has been really hard. And at that particular week prior to my show, it caught up with me. And I couldn't bail on the show. So I managed to pull myself together, get about 4 hours sleep, show up like 40 minutes late to the gig, and sweat profusely through my makeup. And it was a mess, but I was planning on going to treatment like the next day. And there's a number I really love called Rise Up, 100 Day. And I closed the show with that. And I remember being in that moment and singing that song. And I couldn't contain myself anymore. I was so sad and so broken. And yet the words were so powerful, you know, talking about like not giving up and, you know, just like rising up and just keeping that faith, keeping that hope. You know, I've had some really dark, dark moments in my life. And in that moment, through that music, through my performance, and through the audience's reception of it, you know, it's drag. People that go to drag shows don't go there to see the host cry on stage as they sing On for Day. You know, that's not what they're there for. They're there for brunch. But they met me in that moment, and they let me have that moment. And at the treatment center I went to that summer, I got to teach drag makeup class and put on a drag show with people who had never done drag. You know, it was such a weird full circle moment of like, you know, just keep trying. Don't give up. It'll work out as long as you don't give up. And drag has been a testament to that for me.
Yeah. Do you feel like that's helped you in your sober journey and moving through your addiction in a way by just tapping into this other creative side of you and this?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. You know, I think, you know, there's a lot of substance abuse within the drag community, mm-hmm. drinking, drugs. That, and I'm not saying that every drag queen and drag artist out there is an addict or alcoholic by any means. But it is prevalent. And I started drag sober. Drag has always been something that has been sober for me. The few times it hasn't been, I feel completely off and out of whack, or I cry on stage, like I just described. So drag has definitely been, you know, a triumph of my sobriety.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah.
Good. Do you have any other things you want to share as 11 before we meet you as Cameron and let you unveil and see the huge transformation?
Yeah. I mean, you know, the only other thing I could say is, you know, I do this. I create this character. I do this art. And I think a lot of drag artists do, right? To entertain and spread love or to promote a positive message of queer identity. Mm-hmm. My intention is never to hurt anyone. It's never my intention to belittle other people's beliefs around something. And there's a lot of pushback going towards the drag community right now. A lot of hate and a lot of judgment and a lot of, I would say, misrepresentation of what people do drag for. And so if you're new to drag or you're not familiar with drag or it scares you or makes you feel uncomfortable, I just ask that you maybe go see a drag show.
Yeah, they're like the best time ever.
You know, we just want to make you smile and laugh and get your dollar bills. That's really all we want. We have no agenda otherwise, unless we start feeling attacked. And then we will stand up and we will say something, because we're just here to love you, baby. That's it.
Yeah. And there's a big part of humor to it, too.
100%.
I mean, I remember going to my first drag show. I think it was in college, because I lived next to this bar and they would host them frequently.
Yeah.
And man, it was just such a good time. And I just feel like I was cracking up the entire time.
Yeah.
I've done them on bachelorette weekends too. And I mean, it's just it's a good time. Is it pretty common out here? Like in LA, there's definitely shows frequently and you can easily find.
Easily. Hamburger Mary's in West Hollywood, Rocco's in West Hollywood. I mean, they're all over West Hollywood.
Yeah, we have.
They're all over. Long Beach has a great drag scene. There's some stuff in Silver Lake. I recommend, you know, searching Facebook for hashtag drag show or hashtag drag show Los Angeles or LA drag. Go on Instagram. You'll find it. If you want something that's definitely easy to get to, not going to be too overwhelming in terms of like in gay bar vibe, and you want some good food, I always recommend Hamburger Mary's.
Good to know.
Yeah.
Well, let's unveil and talk to you as Cameron. We have a lot more to get into.
And I would love to breathe.
Yeah,
so.
Let's do it. Okay. We'll be back soon, my sweets. And we're back.
Hi.
Cameron, you're now I feel like I know you. I mean, I knew you before, but now it's you. Good to see you.
It's good to see you too. It's funny. I am at drag shows in Denver. I would do the whole show as 11, and I didn't wear breastplate often, so my chest tattoo would show, right? And I'd come out completely de-dragged and like go up to people in the audience I'd interact with just to like, you know, strike up a conversation, and they would stand there and look at me like, who is this weirdo just talking to us? And after a few minutes of conversation, they would like take the rest of the situation in, and they'd see my chest tattoo, and they would like dawn on them like, oh, wait, you're that drag queen.
Same person.
Same person. Just different.
How does it feel taking it all off? Is it
such a relief?
Yeah.
I love it. I do. But the best part of getting in drag is getting out of drag. It's very rewarding.
Yeah. Is that why you wouldn't recommend it to everyone? It's just because it's so time consuming and all of that?
Yeah. I mean, it's time consuming. It's expensive. And the number of times I've said, I'm going to quit drag. But here I am 4 years later, still doing it. You know, it becomes such a deeply ingrained passion in you that you really have no choice but to keep doing it. So when I say don't do it, I just really mean like, make sure you're ready for this, because it's a commitment. Mm-hmm. And one I didn't fully realize I was making so long, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, there's so much more to you.
Yes.
And I would love to get into some more of that. As you know, this podcast is a lot about pleasure and kink and even your fluidity and your sexuality. Maybe we start with that.
Okay.
How do you see your sexuality and all of that?
Yeah. You know, my sexuality has been a really long journey for me. My first sexual experiences were not consensual when I was very young. And those sort of, I think, created an energy in my body of secrecy and shame, lust, confusion. And, you know, they were with the male sex and, you know, also just being who I am naturally. I'm a very well-balanced, like, mixture of flamboyant, gregarious, and I would also say like, you know, strong and like grounded, right? Like there's a duality to who I am as a person. But because I'm not your typical like macho, you know,
quote unquote dude, for the lack of a better word, I'm often, and most of my life have been categorized as effeminate, gay, you know, whatever, you know, slur someone might want to call a young, confused child, you know, to be mean or hurtful. So sexuality for me from a very young age was painted in kind of a very confusing light. It wasn't until, you know, becoming, you know, an adult. Here I'm at 37, right? Today, right now, sitting here with you, Barbie, I can confidently say I know who I am sexually, both in terms of my gender identity and in my sexuality. But it's not always been that easy. I've identified as gay, bi, straight, questioning, queer, pan, demi. I mean, I've run the gambit, right? Often I have felt that like my sexuality and my, you know, energy, whether I'm presenting masculine or feminine, had to be like who I am was defined by that. Like what I meant to you as a person, what I mean to myself as an individual, you know, my body and my sexuality defined all of that. And, you know, I mentioned I'm in recovery. I'm in recovery from crystal meth. And that is a very sexual drug for me. And it's also a very it's a part of my life and part of my story that's heavily tied towards intimacy with men. So, you know, for most of my life, if I wasn't being told I was gay, I was telling myself I was, because that's what I was experiencing. And don't get me wrong, like, I'll joke about it, you know, because I'm comfortable doing so, but like, I've done a lot of gay things a lot, and I've liked them. That being said, it's like, I had to come out of the closet all over again. Right. Like the first time I came out, I must've been 14. Then I went back in the closet and I came out again and did all my, you know, 20s West Hollywood gay stuff. And then somewhere, you know, in that mid-20s into my 30s, I started realizing I was still very attracted to women and people in general. You know, like, let's take the gender out of it, right? Mm-hmm. I'm attracted to people. And I had like longing for experiences outside of gay sex and outside of gay men. And I didn't know how to express that or talk about that. You know, talking about that with my gay friends, they're like, what, girl, you're crazy. Vagina's scary. Or any concept of what, like, you know, it's funny, like as gay men are quite often marginalized and looked down on by like very intense cisgender heterosexual male identity. Right. And yet gay culture does that to anything that's outside of their norm of masculinity and sexuality. And so, you know, if I even broached the subject that I was into a girl or that I wanted to maybe identify as anything else other than gay, I was instantly put in my place, which doesn't feel good.
I was going to say that's exhausting and painful.
Very painful. You know, when we met, I think it was 2018. Yeah, 2018.
I think it was 2019.
It was one of those.
Either way,
somewhere in there, math. You know, that was at a point in my life where I had, you know, in high school, I had a girlfriend. I had had sex with her, you know, many times. I had loved my best friend, Jordan, with like the passion and fire of a thousand suns. Like I had loved women. I hadn't been with a woman in a long time. Other than like, you know, you want to talk about kink. I went to, you know, we call sex and crystal meth use partying, you know, for lack of a more appropriate word, because it doesn't turn into a party after a while. But anyways, I went to party at this guy's house, and like he was there with his mistress, and it was like a whole thing. He was straight. She wanted to peg me. He didn't want to be touched unless she was out of the room. It was a lot for my very high, very confused mind, but we went with it. Right.
So there had been some experience with, you know, different genders and you know, women, in my using here and there. But when we met, I was really looking for a new experience. And, you know, you provided a very safe, healing, place to do that. You know, you were very understanding of what I wanted and what I was going through. And I felt very seen and received by you. It didn't last long, you know, and we'll get into that. But like, you know, my point is, you know, that experience, though brief, planted a seed. It allowed me to continue to look at myself and look at what I wanted in life, and start to identify as something other than gay. Mm-hmm. I believe it was 2020, and I was it was the same sober living that I started doing drag in, and you know, I had fallen for a friend of mine who's a trans man, and we were like seeing each other, and that was a new experience as well. And I was surrounded by, you know, just loving people of all different walks of life. And I don't know if it was like the drag or the relationship with him, or, you know, just maybe COVID brain. I don't know. But like, I just instantly got this like divine spark of like knowledge within myself, and like fervently went to Facebook and like came out again. It was like National Coming Out Week. I was like, I will not be defined by your standards of blah, blah, you know, and basically owned the fact that like, I don't really solely identify as a man. You know, like I'm very comfortable in my physical form, which has taken a long time to be able to say that, you know, as an adult, I can sit in my imperfections and the body I have, and I put work into it. I do my best, and I'm, you know, it's a process. Self-image is a process, but I can confidently say that in my physical form, I'm comfortable, which I feel very lucky to say, because I know that's not true for everyone.
Yeah. Yay for that.
Yay for that. And also, I'm also aware that this physical form does not define who I am on the inside. You know, for me, my soul is both and. Like, I fully believe that I carry the capacity to be both masculine and feminine. I feel that my soul is neither or all of the above. And so for me, it's like, I feel very comfortable stepping into my femininity. I feel very comfortable stepping into my masculinity. I like to call myself gender expansive.
Oh, I love that term.
Yeah. You know, I really identified, well, I didn't identify with it, but I was very drawn to the term two-spirit. And after really looking into what that means and what that means to the culture that it, you know, stems from, I, you know, recognized that I couldn't, and not in good consciousness, take that to be my identity. But that didn't change the fact that I related to it, that I felt on some deeply, you know, metaphysical, mystical, like plane, that like I am more than just a male physical form. And so, yeah, I just started thinking, well, what feels right? And gender expansive came to mind. And with that declaration of like gender identity and gender affirming awareness around myself, I started like, again, saying, you know, I love who I love. I'm attracted to who I'm attracted to. I think sexuality for me is a fluid spectrum that changes every given day. You know, I might wake up tomorrow and decide I never want to sleep with anyone else in the world that doesn't have a penis. Mm-hmm. Or I might decide that vagina is it, way to go. Or I might decide that I want neither and I just want to be held. Like, who knows? But the fact is I don't have to define that for anyone else. I get to choose and just love who I love. And as long as I do it with respect and grace, that's all that matters.
Yeah, so true.
Yeah.
Very well said. Yeah. Do you feel like, as you're this expansive, gender expansive, person and being, do you often, I know you dress in drag, mm-hmm. but do you often like to play with just like dressing up and and wearing more feminine clothing too?
You know, I've worn like lingerie at times. Like I don't own any, like in the sense that like that you would, I guess, classify as like lacy, dainty lingerie, but I have worn it and it was erotic and it did feel strange and different in a stimulating way. You know, I really love leather. You know, it's funny. I love to get dressed up and feel beautiful and like perform as 11, but like, you know, I do another kind of drag too. And that's, you know, like high top sneakers, jock strap, leather harness. You know, I get more into sort of like the fetish kink role play stuff like that.
Yeah. Do you consider yourself a kinky person?
I do.
Yeah.
I have to be comfortable with like for me and my addiction, which is really where most of my kink exploration started, honestly, you know, which is one of the things that I can look back on that part of my life and go, well, do I regret becoming a drug addict? Not my best choice.
Yeah, maybe not the best choice.
Not the best choice, but
you're living with it.
I'm living with it and I'm learning to grow from it. And in that sexual exploration that it caused me to have, I did learn things that I liked. You know, I don't know if I ever would have been open to some of the stuff I tried had I not, you know, done it that way. Now the journey looks like this. How do I take the things that I liked and do them sober? And that for me requires intimacy with a partner and trust with a partner. You know, it's when you're fucked up, it's easy to be like, pee on me, you know? It takes a lot more courage and connection sober to look at your partner and say, hey, you want to try something weird? You know,
are you into that?
I do enjoy water sports.
Nice.
Yeah.
Love that.
You know, it's a kink that changes any given moment, right? Like I've tried it in a variety of ways. And I think it just depends on like the situation and the person or people you're with, you know, not every scenario is going to look the same.
Do you like that because of like the degradation, humiliation side of it? Or is it more like the senses and, or the.
So, okay. Let me break it down.
Yeah, please.
Okay. So like if it's me and a group of guys, you know, there's something hot to me about just like peeing together, you know, or like it becomes almost like a, not that we're actually wrestling, but it's like, it's almost like hazing. I don't know. There's like a hazing to it. I never really liked to feel big, like fully like degraded. Is that a word?
Degraded,
you know? But yeah, like I do see how there's an aspect of I'm giving up some sort of control. Like I've been peed on. I've peed on people. And there is some, like, you're giving up some sense of like control in it.
Yeah. Right? There's a power play.
There's a power play. So it's part that, and it's part like, I think locker room fantasy for me, you know?
Nice. What other things are you into? Whatever you're comfortable sharing.
Yeah, no, for sure. You know, I have enjoyed restraints and I love like, nipple play. I've also like, I had this guy come over once and shoot something. I don't know where it went or what the footage is doing. I'm a little scared to think about it.
There's footage out there.
For sure. There's footage somewhere of me doing something. That's a given. But he like, you know, he was edging me. Right. And so, but he was also like smacking my balls while he did it. And for some reason, like, I don't know, I hadn't cummed in days and it was like the hottest thing. And like, I don't know why, but like that made me discover that I enjoy like a little bit of ball play.
I'm an experienced person. So like some of my biggest like turn-ons and stuff, like I used to like meet up with these guys and we would jerk off with each other and edge and like drink scotch and sniff poppers. And like there was no sex happening. We just watched all sorts of different kinds of porn. They call it goon and baiting. It's so stupid.
But it's, never heard of that one.
You're like being obnoxiously bro-y.
Okay.
About it. Like it's such high levels of testosterone and it's just so stupid. It's almost comical. But there's something about sitting around with a group of straight guys jerking off with each other that like, I don't know, the gay part of me can't help it. Be like, this is fun. You know?
Turned on a little.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. My favorite types of sexual experiences are like bisexual. Yeah, I mean, it's usually what a MMF or like things where it's like group sex, but it's, there's no, oh, he's a dude, I'm not touching him, or, oh, she's a, you know, none of that. Like, I like to feel fully immersed in the experience with all the, with everyone in play.
Yeah, everyone's very fluid and yeah, into each other, equally interested.
Yeah, exactly. More specific kinks. I'm an exhibitionist. I like being watched and putting on a show.
Probably why group play is so fun for
yeah,
you.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So yeah, those are some of like the main ones.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing. Yeah. I remember when we dated, we kind of connected on that group play mm-hmm. energy. Cause yeah. I had been going to a bunch of parties yeah. and you were definitely going to a lot of it's more in the gay community, right? Like it's you were doing gay. A lot of gay parties
a
and
lot
that's
of gay.
That's common.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very common. Yeah, in Denver, there's, you know, there's this one bar. I won't name it because I'm sure they don't want to get in trouble, but they'd have these nights and you'd like walk back on the back enclosed patio and like you shine a light in the wrong spot and you're just like, whoa, that
someone's
is happened.
Blown?
Oh, worse than that. Oh, okay. I'm talking like, you're like, I don't think this is legal, but you know, it's everyone's of age. It's a private space, you know, it's consensual.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, you know, one thing I wanted to talk about or just say to you, you know, the reason we kind of ended was a lot of things, mm-hmm. obviously you had like relapsed and, yeah. and, kind of unloaded some things on me at not the best timing, I right. guess, but, right. You actually have HSV.
I do.
And I would love to talk about that. And I also want to just like apologize to you because I do feel like the way that I reacted to that news probably wasn't the best. And I know there's so much judgment around it and there's mm-hmm. so much pain with people. And I've had listeners come out to me
yeah.
that have it, which is it's herpes, but that's yeah. just kind of the more the term like used. HSV, I feel yeah, like
it sounds prettier.
It sounds prettier than herpes. And it's the actual medical term.
Right.
I mean, or obviously that's not the full medical term, but the yeah. acronym for it. And so I do think that's kind of more normalized is what people call it these days. But I did want to say that I'm sorry. Obviously there were so many more layers sure. to the way that we ended, but sure. I want you to bring kind of some awareness to
yeah.
this STD for people because it can be really lonely
mm-hmm.
and
can be. Yeah. You know, first let me say this, you know, I carry both the one and the two, you know?
Yeah. And I have the one, which yeah. is oral,
which cold is sores.
Cold sores. Yeah. So if you've ever had a cold sore on yeah. your mouth, it'll pop up as
and
yeah,
HSV actually, one. You can actually also get HSV one anywhere on your body.
Okay.
So like, the first time I got herpes or HS, I'm gonna say herpes.
Okay, you can do whatever feels right.
abbreviations are a tongue twister sometimes for me. Anyways, the first time I had an outbreak in my 20s, it was on my butt. It was, and I had no idea what was happening. I thought it was like a hemorrhoid, but I never had a hemorrhoid. I don't know. I was confused. And ashamed and embarrassed. And it had come right after
a very drunken, wild night after, you know, going clubbing. And I don't know if I got that outbreak or that happened because of that night, you know, like I blacked out. I wasn't told or informed by anyone in that scenario that that was a thing, you know, that, that they were a carrier of it. But also the first cold sore I ever got on my mouth, my mom gave me by accident when I was like six, you know? So it's a really weird, like the minute it's no longer on your mouth and it's somewhere else on your body, it does, it becomes very shameful. Mm-hmm. And I think that that stigma around it, you know, maybe I did come in contact with it, someone that night, and maybe it flared something up in me. I don't know. What I do know is that I felt unable to talk about it. And if I was given it that night, they clearly either didn't know or didn't feel capable of talking about it. One of my best girlfriends in the whole world, you know, all through high school, all through our 20s, you know, would, you know, just be terrified of getting it and like be very dramatic about it. It's a very real like stigma out there. And I think it's because, one, I think the word just sounds scary. And two, it's for life. Mm. And I think anything that carries that weight of like commitment, like that level of like, this is forever, especially when you're like still exploring who you are sexually and you're in your, you know, teens and 20s and, you know, or at any age, you know, it can feel like a big burden to carry. And I think the biggest thing, and I think what happened, one of the things that happened with us, was the lack of communication. And, you know, thank you for the apology. You know, I did not handle myself well. In my mind, we were using protection and if that had changed, I would have told you. But really what was happening for me was all of those were just excuses around my fear of not being able to be intimate with you because the experience was so new to me and so exciting and special. And I didn't know how to just say, hey, Barbie, I have herpes without thinking you would never talk to me again. You know, it was a huge lesson for me. And it's something that I've thought on, thought often about. And I've actually, you know, made a point in new relationships and new dating dynamics or, you know, and having sober sex with people where it's like, you need to know this. You know, I also, someone very close to me, her partner of like 9 years, had herpes and didn't tell her. She had no idea for the first many years until she got it. You know, so then I got to watch, this was after us, I got to watch from that perspective, you know, not being the person who's feeling judged and like worried about losing someone and not hearing it from the person that I had that interaction with, but watching someone I love dearly, like I've known my whole life, go through this and be on that side of it and see how hurt and just all of the pain it's caused her and that it's caused her body over the years because that she's a carrier now. It really also made me like be really aware of like, I didn't ask for this. I'm not sure exactly when or how I got it, but that doesn't matter. The fact is I have it and I have a choice to either be upfront and honest about it and educate people on it. You know, the fact is I take meds daily to suppress it. I also, you know, being, you know, an adult who has been in this body a long time, I know the signs of when it's happening and when I need to up my dose or, you know, change my diet. Diet and stress is a huge part of it.
Yeah, I have some friends that have it. And I remember a girlfriend that opened up to me and told me she had it. And she said, you know, exercise. Mm-hmm. And diet really helps. And she, you know, you can go years without an outbreak. And she's the same way where she knows her body. She's had it for years. So she knows when it's coming on. Mm-hmm. And I think that's when she calls the doctor to get her meds. Right. Like, I'm not sure if she takes it every day. But still, it's just, you know, I think honesty, like you said, mm-hmm. was why it hurt me so much, right. I think. And there were other things happening as well with us. And so there were, yeah, but I just think transparency is so important. And so I do think that that's like a really good lesson for people out there, because the big thing is, you know, it's fear.
It is fear.
And the shame comes from the fear, but it's also like us hearing that, the reason people react in a negative way or in a harsh way is all because of fear. Mm-hmm. Like they just don't want it. But I do feel like we need to just bring more awareness to it. I mean, I've had chlamydia 3 times and, and it's just like, no one cares. I mean, maybe some people do, but there's just not this deeply rooted stigma in it. And everyone thinks herpes is so icky and dirty. And I remember this time when I had this, I had this weird, like just this weird thing next to my vagina. And I was like, what the fuck is this? And I like went to the doctor and it was like painful. Mm. And I went to the doctor and she's all like, had, actually it was inside. And I was like, you know what? I think I had just had this dominatrix experience and she had these long ass nails and she had like cut my vagina. Ouch. And it had like then got infected because I had been scuba diving and I don't know, somehow it got infected. And then there was like this cyst happening and all these gross things, TMI. But anyways, I get to the doctor and she's just like, so like, you know, gloves on, like, just like making it so uncomfortable. I'm like, isn't this your job? Like, just see what's going on. Like, don't make me feel like I'm a gross human being, you know? But she like threw out the word herpes and was like, you know, we need to get this tested. We need to make sure. And I just remember feeling like this flood of just like, oh my God, like fear, you know? And, it ended up just coming back as, you know, this infection that got infected and a cyst or whatever and all of that. But it just, I thought about you in that moment because I was like, dang, you know what? Like, I really do feel like the fear kind of took over me in that moment. And even when people have reached out, it's tough. Like I've had an STI, STD episode, but like no one was really interested in that episode. Right. Like it's one of my lowest performing episodes. And I just feel like people are so scared to talk about it.
Yeah, absolutely. They're scared to talk about it. And I think it, like you said, it stems, they don't know about it. They know, they know the stigma around it. You know, I really appreciate you wanting to talk about it. And, it's also like, you know, for example, and I like to, you know, when I'm talking to a partner about it, one, give them the choice and know everything they want to know about it, but also that like I can't just give it to you without having an ACT outbreak.
Correct. And I think that's important for everyone to know too.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's really not transferred unless you have an outbreak. So that another way to really protect yourself is to check the parts that you're having sex with. Which is why I encourage lights on for many other reasons.
Many
too.
Other reasons too, yes.
But that's one way to like protect yourself too, or just be aware. Because you can't pass it to someone unless you're in an outbreak. Yeah.
Hi, sweets. Real quick, I need to interrupt this episode to just clarify that we were talking about the fact that you can't contract HSV unless you're having an outbreak. And that is not actually completely true. There's always going to be that small percentage of people that are still able to contract something, just like condoms are only 99.9% effective or whatever it is. The chances of you contracting it outside of an outbreak are definitely far less, but there's still that chance. And so I just want to clarify that. And I know I made a comment about, you know, checking their parts and being aware of outbreaks and things like that, but you can also be experiencing an outbreak and not have these visible symptoms. They might be other symptoms like discharge or pain or, you know, whatever it is. Everyone's bodies are different and everyone's bodies react differently to this virus. And so it's important to just know that. And to not use this as a sign, like if you don't see anything, that means you're not going to get HSV. So I just wanted to clarify that. And please talk to your healthcare provider or your doctor if you ever have questions about this further before, you know, having unprotected sex always. So thanks again for listening. We'll get back to the episode now.
I mean, I've felt that fear. You know, I take PrEP, you know, which is, you know, pre-exposure to HIV.
To protect you from HIV, yeah.
And, you know, I've had boyfriends that are HIV positive and undetectable. I've been informed after sexual situations in my life that someone is positive. And this was before PrEP, you know, I've had these moments of fear, right? Where it's like, oh, that's a little information that I wish I would have known, or, oh my God, what if? And like, all I can say is that at that moment I went and educated myself, you know, I took the appropriate steps to get tested and stay regular on my testing. And, you know, it's like some of the people I've loved most have had HSV. HSV. Why do I want to say VHS?
Because movies are so good.
Yeah, movies are great.
I lost my train of thought, but just, I think educating is a really good thing for people to do. And again, it doesn't define you.
No.
And I think that's the biggest thing. Do you have any advice of like how to communicate it in the moment for people that are scared to let their lovers know or potential partners?
Yeah. My hard and fast rule is like, it's not the most attractive thing to say on your very first date.
Yeah.
You know, but if we've done dinner and, you know, the movie's over and we're walking into someone's house, like, and that energy is happening, like, I just pull the bandaid off.
Yeah. So before you get intimate,
you know, like before, like it's even, cause there's the thing, like, let's say you do start making out and kissing and certain touching starts happening. And then you're like, oh shit, I need to stop this right now and tell them right now. It's going to feel even worse to do that to yourself. So just do it beforehand. Just be like, hey, I feel like, you know, I would like to be physical or intimate or however you want to communicate it. But I just need to let you know that I am a carrier of
however you want to say it, herpes,
HSV2, and then have the dialogue around it. And it's funny, you know, some of the times I've been most scared to tell someone, you know, they're like, oh yeah, me too. I'm like, okay,
when were you going to tell me?
Like, okay, cool. Or the other reaction I get is, thank you so much for telling me. Like, what's that look like?
Yeah, what does that mean?
They're either just need some more knowledge, or they're already very informed. And they're like, yeah, my ex had it. He never had outbreaks. It's fine. Like, you're good right now. You don't have it, you know. Very rarely. Like, I can honestly not think of a time where me telling someone like resulted in them being like, get out of my apartment, we're not having sex.
Yeah.
That has not happened.
Which is amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think a lot of people just get in their heads and maybe they feel like they said the wrong thing. I think that's for me. Like, I was like, oh, was I my best version of myself in that moment? Yeah. Or did I let every, you know, but maybe, yeah, it was just in my head. Who knows?
No, I think ultimately, you know, we walk through this life to learn stuff, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and if what came out of the dynamic between you and me was lessons on, for me, on how to show up and be more honest, and maybe for you to take a breath and think of it in a more compassionate way, you know, or whatever, mm-hmm. like, then that's beautiful. Mm-hmm. Mission accomplished.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that. Well, I love to ask, you know, people towards the end of my episodes that last time they had that sweet release, because I do love to normalize pleasure and orgasms. Yeah. And
so I will say, you know, we'll end it on this. You know, my experience with you has led through, you know, the last few years, me searching for partnership with a woman, right? Not solely, like, I'm not like, oh, I need a woman, but
yeah. Do you consider yourself monogamous?
I think I'm probably better monogamous than I'm not.
if that makes sense. Like, I really want to be like, yeah, cool. But I don't know, you know, I think if the person, I don't know, the jury's out on that.
Yeah, figuring it out.
I'm still figuring it out. I think it's going to come down to like, if it feels right and I feel met and this is part of the experience and it's done respectfully, sure. You know, I'm not opposed to it, but I'm also kind of like hopeless romantic.
Yeah. And monogamy too is so it's not black and white these days. Like there's so many ways to like experience pleasure openly in a more way, but also have boundaries and all that.
But my point was that, you know, you asked what my most recent sweet release was. I've been, I'm seeing someone right now and it's been really fun to just like get to be sexually explorative with a woman in such a free way. You know, like for years I was so self-conscious about like, I don't know if I know how to please a woman and I don't know, like, what if I, you know, whatever. And I can confidently say I do not have that fear anymore. And that has been quite amazing to let that fear go. So yeah, I mean, there's been a lot of sweet release lately.
Glad to hear it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you feel like you kind of, I mean, you've dated women now, you've been with men, you've kind of, you mentioned trans earlier too. Like you kind of just fall in love with people.
Yeah. 100%. You know, there's just like the gender or the genitalia, the sex of the person, like it's important, you know, it's part of who they are. At the end of the day, like pleasure and intimacy and connection and love and, you know, a person's soul, their personality, that's what I get off on. You know, I can make anything else work.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's beautiful. I love that. Well, thank you so much for being here, Cameron. I really appreciate your time and energy. I know it takes so much time for you to get all of that on.
it's good practice.
And I just love just seeing the transformation, you know. Maybe we should mention really quick, like I saw you, we both were on Soft Light Underbelly and that's kind of where I was. We both were approached via our like FetLife accounts. So that's, you know, we're both kinky fetish people, but, yeah, it was so cool to see you on there. And I was like, wow, what a beautiful person you are in both, you know, the drag. And obviously I know you as you, but I'm so grateful that you were willing to do this. And
when you asked it and we discussed what we would talk about and all that, it felt like it was time to talk about it. And, you know, it was nice to see you as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, thanks again for being here.
My pleasure.
And to all y'all out there, be sweet to yourself and be sweet to your lovers and just be sweet out there. Love you guys. Talk soon.